maybe.
I mean, we should wait to see before we discuss the main event, obviously.
Yes.
But there is some other news in the, you know, television world that we should talk about. The new Star Trek also aired this weekend. It was something.
It was a Star Trek? Is that what you're trying to say?
It was, well, it's what I've come to expect from modern Star Trek. It's modern Star Trek minus Picard season 3.
Okay.
So that's not a great thing.
Okay.
You know. I don't get it. I don't get, like, they don't understand what made Star Trek special.
Are they trying to kill Picard again?
Picard's dead. They got rid of it by saying this show takes place 800 years later. But they gave up on literally everything that made Star Trek Star Trek.
Okay.
There's no they had to rebuild warp drive because, like, all of the material that, like, used for warp speed is destroyed, all of it in the universe, because someone got sad. Literally, that was the plot line. Someone got sad and it blew up all of, like, they merged with this element on the molecular level and then they got depressed and it destroyed the world, like every starship. That's the kind of writing we're dealing with.
That's pretty amazing.
And then, you know, like, somehow all of the, you know, and that got rid of all of the warp drives and all the, like, the things that make material. So, like, there's hunger and strife again, even though everything was fixed. Like,
okay,
it was supposed to be a brighter future, but it's all shit. Like, I don't know.
Okay.
There's a lot of things. I won't go into detail because I know there's so many sources online that,
for sure,
show you how awful this is. Oh. My biggest I believe every episode of the show cost between $10 and $15 million, so it was not made cheaply. And with that in mind, they released the first episode as a live stream on YouTube.
Okay.
And what is the most interesting part about that is that the live stream maxed out at 1,900 concurrent viewers.
Okay.
While at the same time, a Star Trek fan put a action figure of Spock in a chair and just sat put the camera on it and live streamed that for the same, like, for 2 hours. That got 3,000 concurrent views. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I don't think the show's going to do well.
Doesn't sound it. I mean, some shows are okay to skip. You know, you just be like, hey, it's just,
I know, not, but it's me. Like, there's no Star Trek fans anymore. We're all aging out and, like, don't like what Star Trek has become. And no one new is, like, they targeted towards Gen Zers, and no one's going to, like, none of them want to watch Star Trek.
Sure, for sure.
So, anyway, okay,
that's sad to hear, though.
It is, because there was so much hype after Picard season 3, because we had one of the best parts about it, and why I would recommend watching solely that season, because they got rid of the writers who came back somehow for Starfleet Academy, but the writers that kind of ruined Picard. And somehow season 3 saw a reunion of Generations, or Next Generation, which was incredible. Which led to rumors, and everyone was on board of doing Star Trek Legacy, which is, like, them in the future. Like, them, you know. But then they abandoned that for this Starfleet Academy set 800 years later. No Legacy characters, no nothing, because they're all dead. It was bad.
That sounds bad.
Anywho. That's all I'll say about Star Trek. I will... I will wait for any other big. What have you been watching this week,
Steven? So I got a few things in the pocket.
Oh, yeah.
I started watching. Oh, I watched and finished Hijack, which was pretty good. I liked it.
Okay. Yeah. That is next on the list. Now that I'm not gonna watch any of Starfleet Academy.
Hijack season 2 just started, so I'm gonna watch that.
All right.
I did watch the new Game of Thrones, so I was gonna wait for Sean to show up.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's going to be our topic today. We're not going to actually watch it because we all watched it. But I figured because we're doing, you know, this later episode, we can just kind of talk about it.
Yep. Young Sherlock's on my radar.
All right.
I don't know how good that's going to be. I'm also deep into The Pit season two. I think we discussed that last week, though.
Yeah. What are your thoughts on season two?
Good. I know they're building up to something big coming. I feel that the vibe of the last episode was such like a something is on the horizon.
Now, here's an interesting question. Do you think that Robbie's not going to leave? Is something going to happen today?
I think something's going to happen. I think something's going to happen.
Okay, because, like, I don't know if this other doctor, like, what bothered me the most is, like, I understand she's trying to do ideas and, like, try to get, like, changes, which, for better or for worse, she's just trying to change things.
Yeah.
Which, good luck to you. Seriously, in this kind of situation. However, like, what really scared me is that when she was talking about, like, to the residents of the interns, so what did you think of that, you know, diagnosis? And they started talking about the thing. Like, no, the AI. Like, that was her focus.
Yeah.
And that doesn't bode well, like, for what she thinks. And it's like, but I love how he immediately pointed out, well, you know, that's not the medication she's taking. It's wrong. Don't give her that or that could kill her.
And she's like, oh, make sure you review.
Yeah. So what time does it save if you have to review it all?
Yeah. When you're a doctor, especially.
Anyway.
Who are we killing?
We are talking about the season two while you were gone of The Pit.
Nice. I'm caught up with you guys.
Oh, amazing. Oh,
great.
We are talking about Dr. Robbie's replacement.
Oh, Al Hashimi.
Yeah, Al Hashimi. Yep. And what scared me the most in that episode is that she doesn't try to just be teaching to like help or change for good. She's like, no, look how cool this AI is that got the diagnosis wrong or got the medicine wrong that could kill the patient if they actually gave her that.
Yeah.
Like she was actually, look how good this AI is. Go ahead, sorry.
I heard somebody on TikTok commenting about like one of the lines that she had said. I don't know if it was episode one or episode two. And how it was like clearly like implying, you know, at least what's to come with her.
Oh, but, okay.
So she got all this experience working in the VA. Like she says that like right off the bat.
Mm-hmm.
The VA is a federal government. I don't know, owned is the right word, system. But you know, it's run by the federal government.
Sure.
So it's part of the federal government. And so when a doctor who works for the VA commits malpractice or does something against their code of ethics or against the law or whatever, they themselves cannot be sued. They are immune from suit because they are federal government employees. So the federal government, actually the VA, gets sued. The doctor does not. And what Dr. Al Hashimi had said in one of the first two episodes of the season was, I've never been sued for malpractice, or like a patient has never sued me personally for malpractice, something like along those lines.
Mm-hmm.
And if she was coming from the VA, well, yeah, of course you can't be sued.
That's insane.
So I'm a little worried about what that means.
Right. And that also, like, all she had to do to make Dr. King feel better was just say like, oh yeah, it happens to everyone. She doesn't have to talk about her personal experience. But Dr. Robbie was like, yeah, I've been sued four times. Don't, like, it happens. We're in emergency medicine. Like, it happens here the most because decisions have to be made in such a, like, and they were talking about this, you know, for last season too, when, like, it's, when all of the shit went down and they had the shooter, like, it's, mm-hmm. it's just, there's no charting. There's no nothing. Like, things are going to happen. We can't control. We just have to try to save as many lives as possible. You know, like some people that we could save if everything was fine are going to die. And that's fucked up. But like, so like all she had to do was just make Dr. King feel better. And she failed on that miserably. Anyway, now that we've caught up, what did you think about those last few episodes? Because like everyone says that's kind of the strongest part of that season was the mass. Well, I know it's hard to say strongest because it's the mass casualty event, right? It's awful, but like those episodes are probably the best quality.
So, okay. I, for the life of me, thought, okay, for some reason, I thought that the season one had 16 episodes, like way before I started watching it. Mm-hmm. I don't know why. I probably something one of you guys said at one point about 16 hours or whatever. I don't know. Anyways.
Okay, fair.
I didn't look up the episode total, which is like something so incredibly uncharacteristic for me. So before the shooting, the mass casualty event, the Pit Fest, whatever.
Yeah.
When Robbie's talking about, all right, it's almost the end of the shift, and he sends Dr. Collins home.
Yeah.
And of course, all the stuff happens with Langdon.
Yeah.
So he's not there at that time, and then like all this other stuff. You know, he's trying to get rid of who's the charge nurse?
Shit.
The one who got punched. He's trying to get rid of her. Like, yeah,
who's fucking awesome. I love her so much.
I know, she's the best. She's so on top of everything. It's right? Amazing. I wanted to like stab that guy when he punched her, by the way. As an aside.
And I love him as an actor because it's what's his name? Who did it? D'Onofrio? The dude who used to live in Montclair. Way.
That wasn't D'Onofrio,
was it?
That
wasn't. Who the fuck? Who am I thinking of then? Who was? Because I know that guy from something.
Yeah, he seems like he's definitely like a that guy kind of character actor.
All right, fair enough.
Anyway, okay, so anyways, like when that episode's going down, and like, you know, I'm like looking at the, you know, episode title or whatever, the text that appears at the beginning of the episode to tell you the time frame, and I was just like, oh, okay. So it's like a 12-hour or 12-episode season or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I guess I was mistaken, but that's cool. And I was like perfectly happy with season one the way it was. I was like, I wonder how they're going to end it.
Yeah.
You know, because I felt like Langdon was going to come back into play at some point. I felt like that. But I was like, I don't know what's going to happen. And then, of course, the madness ensues.
Yeah.
So I was already leaving that last episode before all the chaos with, this is a great show. I really enjoyed this.
Yeah.
I wasn't expecting more of it. It gave me what I thought I was going to get.
Yeah.
And I was like, all right, well, I guess that's that. And then that happens. And I was like, wait, how many episodes are there? And I was like, holy shit, I got like four more episodes to go. So we binged it basically in like, I think three sessions, including the last two episodes or the first two episodes of season two.
Mm-hmm.
I needed to take a break after like the second hour of the, you know, like last arc of season one. I was like, it was very late, number one, but more so than that, I was like feeling just like so like emotionally drained by all of it.
Yeah.
Because it really like their acting, their writing, everything, the pacing, it makes you feel like you're in it and it's real.
Yeah.
And it's also like that whole time you're trying to empathize with all these doctors and nurses and other people. And you're like, oh yeah, I can't do that. Like, like I'd have to full on disassociate to a level that like, I'm not aware the TV's on, you know?
Which is funny because that guy, that one Chinese or Asian doctor, like was able to do very easily. The one who's the new attending.
Oh my god, the guy who just kept drinking more and more Dunkin' iced coffee. And later he's like, I really gotta pee. And you're like, bro, are we serious right now? Like,
you know, you were
literally flaunting your like one third full, like gigantic Dunkin' Donuts iced coffee. Like, come on.
I've heard that some doctors do that. Like ER doctors can do that. Like they have to get through those kind of situations. Like what happened to him is one of the reactions that some people have to this type of thing.
I mean, I don't know. I was like, I don't know what the deal with this guy is.
Yeah.
I still don't know what the deal with him is, but I kind of enjoy him anyways. So he's fun. Yeah. I love Abbott.
Yep.
He's Abbott such rules. A good foil for Robbie. He also feels like he's a former member of New Kids on the Block. And I'm not going to explain that, but I understand what you mean. There's a history there.
Now that
he looks like Donnie Wahlberg, and he acts like Donnie Wahlberg, and I'm like, bro, were you in like the like original boy band? Because I'm beginning to think that's what your combat experience is.
But you like the reveal at the end too with his leg, which was great.
All of it was great. It was so well done.
Yeah.
Also, like where Robbie's trying to revive. Man, I'm like struggling with names now.
Who's the girlfriend?
Jake's girlfriend.
Yeah.
And it's like four bags of blood, and Dr. Abbott's just like, bro, like,
yeah,
you know, it, but I appreciated how he didn't like, just like pull him away and make him stop.
Yeah.
Right. Like, he clearly gave him his moment in the same way that like Robbie and Whitaker had that moment in Peds.
Oh, which was fantastic. Yeah.
It was fantastic. I love Whitaker. He's between him and Mel King. I'm like these two are great.
I hate what's her name so much though. Sanchez. Oh, is it Sanchez?
No, it's not Sanchez. Santos.
You're sorry. Close. Okay. My bad.
Santos. I was like, come on. I know it's like that. He's almost there. I just don't like her. Like the whole thing with Langdon, like on the one hand, he was being a total dick to her and clearly, you know, he's got his reasons.
Yes.
But like everybody else around her, like commenting on her being like, you know, like a fucking like snitch and like being so full of herself on her first day of work.
Yeah.
Like I was just like, yeah, like I don't really want to empathize with Langdon, but I'm way empathizing with him. Like,
yeah,
I feel bad for him. Like, clearly, like, you know, he's the one who needs help. He's doing something that's not only illegal, it's unethical, like all that stuff, everything Robbie said to him, you know. But then it's like, at the same time, like, this girl is, I say girl, this is a little condescending to her, but like, the actor did such a good job with that. Like, she almost got X-Pac heat from me. I'm like, if I see her on the street, I'm gonna be like, you fucking suck. Like,
yeah.
But then she kind of pulled me back enough that I'm like, okay, like it's more like a Joffrey Baratheon type deal where I'm like, you are a see you next Tuesday, but like, good job, my dude. I really enjoy you.
Yeah.
I'm not a fan of Santos. Langdon is interesting. I like the dynamic between Langdon and Dr. King, especially after she treated the autistic patient.
Yeah. And then he did the same thing for her in season two, yeah. Which was fucking great. I love Langdon season two, where he's a little bit more humble and just like, listen, I fucked up and wants to make himself better. And like, he's literally trying, like he's doing, he came clean my God, the alcoholic. Now I'm blanking on names. The guy who's like there every episode, like in every, you know.
Oh, yeah. For some reason, I want to call him Earl, and I don't think it's Earl.
Something like that. But yeah, we know. The guy with the liver failure.
Yeah.
But like, he just came out to, like, I don't know if that's the best way to do that, but it was great. It was very moving. Like, I felt it. And he's really trying. And like, obviously, Robbie is hurt. Like, really bad, because he was his go-to guy. And he just betrayed him. But, you know, I really hope they get to clear the air. I really do.
Yeah. I feel like it's going to get a little easier as time goes on. And honestly, like, I'm kind of expecting a bit more of a character growth arc from Santos as well. Either she's got to get kicked out because she sucks, or like, she's got to grow and change a little. So I'm interested to see what we get from her. Oh, yeah. Plus, like, where's Dr. Collins?
She did not. The actress, they couldn't get her back.
Oh man, she was so good.
She was awesome. Oh no, Collins is the one, the bald lady who they right. That's the one I'm thinking of.
She's short hair. The black lady that was previously with Robbie.
Yes.
Possibly.
Yeah. She is not coming back, unfortunately.
That's a bummer.
Yeah, I know. That's why they added the new nurse lady who's going out with Dr. Robbie.
Yeah. Okay. All right. That one.
So, but I love that line where the head nurse is like, you know, I hope you know what you're doing. That was fantastic.
Yeah.
But yeah, so the last question, and I asked it to Steve, is do you think he's going to, giving all the things that are happening, is something going to happen that makes Dr. Robbie not leave? Like, are we going to, he's not going to like leave for his sabbatical, which could be for a while. Like, you know, or are we going to get a jump ahead for, because it already got renewed for season three, which thank God. But do you think like we're going to get a huge jump to season three, or he's not going to leave?
What was the jump between one and two?
Eight,
9 months?
Yeah. Yeah, because we're now on July 4th weekend. Which is going to be insane.
Fireworks, wounds. Yeah. My favorite. Of which I carry some. including my damaged hearing in my left ear. Yeah, I think there's got to be some brief jump. How long is Robbie supposed to be on for, though? It's not like a super long period of time.
Well, they don't actually say. He just says a while, like, because he's going on sabbatical, which for different companies, depending on how long you have tenure there and how long you've worked, I think you can take like a year, right? Like sometimes longer. It depends on the company and their rules, but like sabbaticals are not like a month.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I guess I heard sabbatical and my mind was just like, it means 3 months, you asshole. Yeah, clearly that could mean more than that, or maybe even less. But yeah, I think there's going to probably be a similar jump. I don't think they're going to like leap ahead by any means.
Sure.
Because that wouldn't make much sense. But I do think there's probably going to be, I don't know, probably within 6 months to a year.
Yeah.
I think that's safe to say. Fair. Especially given like how they're, you know, production times and other things for like filming schedules and coordinating all these people.
Of course. Especially now that they're actually getting bigger because of the show.
Yeah. Although I did see, did I send you guys the TikTok of Dr. King popping up at Walt White's high school in Breaking Bad?
No, I didn't know that. That's awesome. I mean, yeah, there's a scene, the daughter, right? So
right, it's like where they're having one of the like the school wide like assemblies in the gym, and Walt is sitting like with the other like teachers and faculty and administration, like kind of on the basketball court, mm-hmm. and like the kids are getting asked questions, and like she's one of the people that asks a question.
Oh, that's
awesome. Really funny, because then it cuts right back to Bryan Cranston, and I'm like, oh yeah, I totally see it now.
Amazing. So yeah, anything else on the pit that we didn't cover that you want to like, anything that stood out to you?
I just really liked that it felt like a lived in world. I mean, I get that, yeah. Like you're kind of like from the perspective of like Whitaker and Santos and I forget her name. Her mom's the irritating, full of herself doctor.
Yeah,
like the
literal med student still.
Yeah, like their perspective is, you know, like that's kind of like us, because like we don't know, as obviously they know way more than we do, but we don't know that much, and like we're new, and but like it's like other than them, as they like kind of like learn and integrate themselves into this world feels like it's real and it's been running for a very long time. Yeah. It feels very lived in. Which I like, huge credit goes to the actors and the writers and yeah. everybody, because like it's hard to pull off and have it feel authentic, and yeah. I thought it felt very authentic,
and it doesn't hold your hand. It doesn't like need like 10 minutes of exposition like, you know, to explain this is how this hospital works. This is like, it's just like you're in this world, you're dropped in, you have to figure it out as you go, which exactly is what, you know, these med students and these new interns and residents are doing, which amazing. And I love that Whitaker is also the man now in season 2.
Yeah, Whitaker. I like and like the weird, like the whole weird thing. Oh, him asking Robbie about, like, he's like, by the way, like, what were you saying?
Yeah.
And he's like, and I was like, I knew what that, I was like, oh, he's doing the Shema. I was like, I had to memorize the Shema when I converted. Mm. I don't remember it anymore, which tells you about my journey. Anyways, but I was like, I knew exactly what he was doing at the time. But then like how Whitaker like kind of make like relates back to it.
Yeah.
And like also the whole thing about, he's like, I'm just from a farm in Nebraska. And like, you know, it's like he's a really cool character. I enjoy him a lot. I hope to see more out of that actor, because I think he's got a good future.
I agree 100%. There's one more question I wanted to ask both of you about it, and now I've lost it. Oh yeah. Like, do you think like they made some allusion, is Santos dating that, like surgeon now?
I don't know. I don't think so. They did talk about it the last episode, but nothing's come up again in this season.
I just remember it was an offhand comment, but I remember something in episode 1 where like she was upset at Whitaker for doing something in their shared, like they obviously had shared a space at some point. And I know that at the end of season 1, Santos moved in with, or Whitaker moved in with Santos.
Yeah. So
it just made me think that there's something going on between the three of them. Obviously, I don't think he's dating either one, but like,
Whitaker, good God.
Yeah, I know, right? That is a lot to juggle, and that is a lot of personality.
Yeah. Where else, Ruppel? You need to run, son.
Yeah, my God. Anyway. Last comment. I saw this brought up in an interview, and I didn't hear his answer, but do you think Noah Weil at this point knows anything about medicine? He's played a doctor for, like, over a decade. And if the medicine in both shows he's done is so real, do you think any of that, like, sticks with him?
I think it probably comes out in, like, really random moments, or, like, I don't know, obviously, I don't know if he talks in his sleep, but if he talks in his sleep,
yeah,
or, like, you know, he gets a little too drunk, you know, has a few too many edibles or something, like the guy in season one who was, like, on the precursor to, like, EMS 911 crews.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like the crew of black men in Pittsburgh in the 1960s, and how they, like, that whole thing. And they're like, wait, are you a doctor? And it's like, they keep asking him, and finally it's like, no, like, this is his, like, this is how he knows this.
Yeah.
That's what I think is probably like for all, most of these people.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
No Wiley in particular, because he's been doing it far longer. But yeah, it's interesting. Did you hear the thing about how he was, like, basically on the edge of just, like, being flat broke during COVID?
No, I didn't hear this. What happened?
He was, like, I mean, I guess, like, a lot of the acting jobs had dried up, and he hadn't been working, and then COVID hits and it's like he's really not working. He said that he has, like, I think it's baseball cards, but he had, like, a great collection of, like, baseball cards. And he's like, I'm basically, like, posting, like, getting ready to post them on eBay, just to be able to make some money. And then I don't know if it was, like, that's when he, like, the idea for what would become The Pit came to him.
Yeah.
Or got kicked to him. But it was, like, around that time. And, like, this basically, like, pulled him back from the, you know, not the brink in that his life was on the line or anything, but, like, he was like, yeah, like, he's like, I feel like everything is kind of done. Wow. And now he's very not done, and he's doing great, which is, you know,
but do you think
he's a good actor?
He's an incredible actor, but do you think he's upset that he's, like, the only time he gets accolades and awards is when he does plays a doctor? Like, he's won Emmys for both The Pit and for ER as Dr. Carter.
I need to see, honestly, I haven't even really looked at his filmography, so I don't even know what else he's in. I mean, I knew the name and I knew the face.
Yeah,
it's so strange, but, like,
well, that's, like, how big
other than ER
was, by the way.
I could not tell you something that I knew him from.
Fair. Like, ER was one of those shows that was such a, like, a cultural touchstone that you didn't have to watch it to, like, understand, like, to recognize people from it, you know?
Yeah. Like, I honestly probably confused him with Anthony Anderson a ton, and I'm like, no. Like, Noah Wiley was not in Revenge of the Nerds. So, like, that's okay.
He was in the Librarian movies, which I have no idea, but directed by Jonathan Frakes, which is awesome.
Riker?
I've never seen those movies, but now that I know it stars Noah Wiley and written by Jonathan Frakes, that's, I might have to watch those.
Wait, is Frakes Data or is that Riker?
No, Riker.
Okay, yeah.
He was in Donnie Darko?
Sure. Look, I don't like Jake Gyllenhaal, so I'm not going to go into that.
No, totally fair.
Yeah, he's not quite at the... You know, honestly, my X-Pac heat scale, X-Pac is actually at the bottom because I find Sean Waltman to be an adorable person now. Jared Leto's at the peak, right? And then what's his name, the guy you just mentioned?
Oh,
Jake Gyllenhaal. He's not too far behind.
Fair. All right, that wraps up my discussion. Any other shows anyone want to talk about before we get to our main event?
So we stumbled into, so after we finished The Pit this weekend, we stumbled into Ponies on Amazon.
Oh, yeah. Okay, I've heard of this.
Amelia Clarke and Hilary Richardson.
Yeah.
It, we watched it all in one sitting, basically. It's like, it's 8 episodes. It was great. It was really fun. Like, it was the right amount of humor and like espionage and like period piece, you know, kind of all wrapped up. So it was just, you know, it was a good time. And ends without spoiling anything. It ends on a cliffhanger. So I haven't looked to see if they're getting another season, but I hope they do. It was really entertaining.
That's awesome. Okay. So what is the premise? Because I've heard that it's like getting good reviews, but I haven't heard anything about the actual show.
Okay. So I'm going to give a couple details about the first episode.
That's it's totally like, fine.
What's in the trailer. So, you know, suck it. So ponies means persons of no interest, you know, as opposed to a person of interest, POI. Yeah. So in Moscow in the, I think it's 1976, you have like all these Americans at the embassy. A lot of them are obviously CIA. KGB cares about CIA agents, but they don't care about like their wives or families. They're like, these are people of no interest. You know, people who don't know anything, people aren't part of that world, even though they're living here. So Amelia Clark's husband and Haley Lou Richardson's husband are CIA agents working undercover for working for like the State Department or the ambassador in Moscow. And they die, or they allegedly die in a plane crash like 30 miles south of Moscow. And the two women get sent home. They run into the head of Moscow station at Langley after their star ceremonies, and basically beg him to send them back to the Soviet Union so that they can find out what actually happened, because the CIA doesn't know.
Oh.
And so they kept convincing and pushing and pushing and pushing, and finally they're like, okay, we'll send you back. And so they go back, and it's like basically how they're given assignments, they're given, you know, all these jobs, like, and at the same time they're trying to solve this mystery of, you know, what happened to their husbands.
So interesting.
That's
okay.
That's the setup for it. It's just really good time. Like, very easy to watch. Keep, you know, follow. Like, even like the only thing is it's a little heavy on the Russian dialogue, so be prepared for subtitle reading.
But other than that, down with it.
Yeah, no, I just get so sick of that.
Fair enough.
There's also one scene kind of later in the season, it gets a little trippy, and it cuts in and out of like, it's like a Russian actor speaking Russian with English subtitles. And then he starts speaking English, and then there's Cyrillic subtitles, and it's like the screen gets kind of hazy. Which at that point I was asking if my edibles had kicked in or what was happening, because it was confusing. But yeah, other than that one little weird fever dream that I had, it was a solid 8 episodes, and I'm glad that Amelia Clark's working in something like this again. She's a good actor.
Fair enough. Yeah, I agree. Steve, anything from you that you want to talk about before we move on to our main event?
Nah, you guys really covered everything.
So. Yeah, sorry. Didn't mean to take over the conversation. All right. So this is an interesting episode. We are not going to cut away this time because, I mean, you want me to play? I can play it if you want, if it'll help.
Yeah.
But
I can wake Max up and make him do it.
He loves doing it. So the show we're going to cover tonight, as you know by the title, is Night of the Seven Kingdoms, which premiered this previous Sunday. This episode will go up, you know, on Wednesday morning. So, you know, it is the new spinoff Game of Thrones show. And we have all watched it, and we've come here to discuss, you know, what's going on between Dunkin' Egg. Dunkin' Egg was the name of the novella.
Is it Dunkin' Egg, or
am I saying?
I know it's not a Night of the Seven. Is it a Night? I don't know. I get all these mixed up.
I do too.
Steve, yeah. I'm relying upon you here.
It's egg is something else. Dunkin' Egg.
Okay, it's not an egg. Right. You're good.
The Hedge Knight. A little kid.
Yeah,
he's a the Hedge Knight. There we go. Okay. That's the first book.
But he is Dunk. Dunk is the Hedge Knight. Okay. Yeah. I wasn't making that up.
The important part is that he's sad.
I feel like we're in Spinal Tap right now.
So Let's go just dive into this. What are your guys' thoughts? What did you think? Whoever wants to go first.
Steve, you go for it. I was just talking
about it. I think it's a great setup, actually, for future episodes to come. I really like the thing that really caught my eye was the cinematography. I really thought that was really good. There's a question I'm going to pose to you guys, if you thought the first scene was offensive or not. There are people saying they were offended by it, apparently.
No, that was hilarious. I think it's definitely, I just consider it part of this, like, it was definitely such a lighter tone than Game of Thrones.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, I think that was 100% intentional.
Yeah, and I've seen some people even commenting, since George R. R. Martin has been so outspoken about how much he loves this adaptation so far, and he loves the crew and the cast, as opposed to how Game of Thrones ended and how season two of House of the Dragon went from his perspective. And he's like beefing with all those people right now. I almost wonder if this was like a little eye wink to him just being perturbed at everything else. And it's like, because they were playing at least a soft kind of slightly modified version of the Game of Thrones theme.
Yeah.
Right when that happened. And it's like literally the first thing after the credits, or not the credits. It's like the first jump, right? Like, mm-hmm. And it's like, you can't look away. It's like a car crash. I don't think it was offensive. I mean, like, whatever. Like, if people are saying it's offensive, I guarantee you it's like people who heard, oh, this is like the more kid-friendly George R. R. Martin adaptation, and perhaps were so naive as to bring their children into the room. Or it was people who like either casually watched Game of Thrones or like, you know, maybe watched some of it, didn't watch all of it, like kind of knew the high points, low points, all that. And not the minutiae of it, because like there's some gross, disgusting shit that you see in Game of Thrones. Like there's like a smash cut in the Citadel when Sam's there, and it's like, is this diarrhea? And it's like stew, but it's like clearly it could have gone either way. like, you know, just get over it. It's fine.
Yeah. I will bring up, this is interesting, you guys both brought it up, which is that the modified Game of Thrones theme, and you know how the music didn't stand out as much. I mean, it's not Djawadi, right?
No, it is. I thought it was.
No, because according to the credits, it's Djawadi wasn't part of this one.
Oh.
It was Dan Romer.
Okay.
Known for Lilo and Stitch, Luca, Beast of the Southern, let's see what else he's done. Not much, mostly TV. Definitely not the glowing resume of Djawadi.
Why couldn't they get my boy Djawadi back?
I don't
What's
know.
What's he doing?
I mean, it's still an HBO project, which he seems to do pretty much all of.
What's his name? I might have him in a cage.
Djawadi? The Iranian German guy?
Yeah, that sounds right. Oh, wait, that's John Williams.
Why do you have John Williams in a cage? The man's a national treasure.
No, I need entertainment. Those brooms don't dance themselves, man.
Oh my god. But the setting is gorgeous. Let's start there. That like the way the landscape is set up and everything, and like the fucking tents, and it was all really fucking cool.
I saw someone comment on the cinematography being like, wow, they brought color back to Westeros.
That is a really good way to put it.
It's like, yeah, it's like so vibrant. Like, it looks great.
I mean,
that reminds me of that comment I've heard of, like, where people were saying, like, every time they film in Mexico, it's always a piss yellow.
Yeah. That is true.
Well, that's what's his name's fault from Traffic?
Yeah, you're right.
Is that
you're
Michael
right.
Mann?
Michael Mann?
Yeah, it's because they were switching back and forth so much between U.S. and Mexico. He's like, I gotta heavily filter both of them. So America is blue and Mexico is very yellow. That's like, bro, like have no idea what you've done.
To be fair, Robert Rodriguez didn't do any favors by keeping it going for all his low budget movies. But I think that was more a budget thing more than having
well, good even Breaking writing. Bad did it. Like, I mean, I it's like when the twins are walking their way through, you know, Mexico and I guess Central America before it or wherever. It was very clearly heavily filtered like that. But like, it's like if you just go over the border into the desert in New Mexico, totally fine. Like, yeah. Totally normally lit. Like, all right.
Oh, damn. Now I was just reading up on Jawandi. He got to start doing the music for System Shock 2. That's amazing.
Pretty cool.
I love him. He's the best.
Yeah, and then collaborated with RZA for Blade Trinity.
Hell yeah.
That's fucking great, man. I love this dude. And he still does video games for fun, though, because he loves video games. That's so fucking cool. All right, cool. I'll put his profile away. I love the cinematography. I love the vibrant, the bright nature. Let's talk about the story itself, because it's really like funny. And we're just going to limit to the first episode, obviously, because we don't know, you know, what's going to happen next. But the whole thing, right, which we were told from the beginning, was this is a novella Duncan Egg. They were only together for two scenes. Like, He's like, oh, hey, by the way, I followed you here. You know, I'm just going to be your squire. And he's so super happy about it, which is cool. But like, they already had chemistry with the whole conversation about seeing the shooting star, which I thought was really nice. But I don't know. I feel like this episode established some stuff, but there wasn't much to it. Like, we didn't get into anything really. Like, I guess we established his knight died. He's trying to take his place. Yep. No one will acknowledge him as a knight.
Yep.
Well, we don't. There's no witness to him being dubbed. Yeah. So it's like, well, are you telling the truth?
Yeah, exactly.
And you, the cool thing is, we don't really truly know if he's telling the truth either.
That's fair. Also true. Do you think he is? Honestly, let's go into this.
I mean, it depends if you think he's an unreliable narrator or not. Because it's I don't know. I don't know. I guess it's not really narrated by him. I don't know.
I mean, it's clearly his POV. I mean, we stay with him like the whole time. We're not getting his monologue, his internal monologue, but I mean, honestly, I feel like that might not all be that interesting.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah.
I don't know how much is going on in there.
Yeah. exactly.
But I am enjoying what I'm seeing so far. So
I also liked how it's set up. So I thought it did a good job of setting the groundwork for. Without necessarily spoiling what's going to happen the last two seasons of House of the Dragon, with all the dragons being destroyed and like kind of, you know, the realm kind of getting on like really, you know, uneven ground. And then the Blackfyre Rebellion, which happens, you know, like 10, 20 years before this, the first one at least. And so you got like this whole really interesting period in time, the dragon, like, puppet or whatever thing that breathes fire, like, and you know, that whole thing was like really cool and fun. And it's like so weird, it's almost like if you go from watching like Revenge of the Sith to straight through to A New Hope, it's like, this was 19 years ago, why do the people not actually believe there ever were Jedi? Like,
yeah.
You know, it almost feels like, oh my God, like this feels like a more, like a realer world because there aren't dragons. But it's also like how quickly these people have forgotten what like was there, like, you know, within their lifetime.
I will also make the observation because I had this discussion about Jedi and, you know, like how it like kind of they were quickly, obviously propaganda played a huge part in eliminating them as a real thing. But I really don't think that for, you know, a lot of these people, like Jedi were part of their day-to-day life.
Right.
They probably heard about them, but like they never, you know, interacted with them. They were busy fighting a war for a very long time. And before that, they were just kind of like, you know, priests in their little, or, you know,
warrior monks that like no one ever sees. Yeah.
So like, I think it's easy to make
they're
that
Oompa Loompas.
Yeah, exactly. They're Oompa Loompas. And it's the same thing, I think, with the dragons. Like, for the most part, obviously, Westeros, you know, like, I don't think everybody saw dragons. Yeah. And I think it's easy to kind of fall into that mindset of, like, yeah, it's just a myth.
Well, but it also kind of ties nicely in with House of the Dragon's full plot and where it's going to go and whatever. Read Fire and Blood. The whole story's there.
Sure.
The dragons all get killed, and like a lot of them end up getting killed by the people of King's Landing, who are just like fucking fed up with a Targaryen civil war that involves dragons just burning shit.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of interesting how, like, in the same way with like Jedi after Order 66, it's like the public is turning on them because they were like, you've caused us all this problem, like you've caused us all this hurt and loss and death. It's kind of an interesting parallel.
That is a really interesting parallel. I never kind of thought about that. But
and how, like, it, you know, going forward to Game of Thrones, how the rebirth of dragons is like seen as this like awe, like inspiring thing, because it, in the same way that like Luke, you know, defeating, you know, Vader and the Emperor killing Palpatine, or Vader killing Palpatine,
yeah,
like, that whole thing, like, you know, kind of sparked this out, like, holy shit, like, look at that. Yeah,
interesting, good to think about. I'll look more into that. All right, I took notes, sorry. All right, let's continue with this episode. So it starts, obviously, the poop taking a shit, you know, burying his knight, heading off to this tournament. I haven't watched Game of Thrones in forever, and I don't know, like, what do you think the significance of what's his face coming back is? The dude in the tavern.
The dude in the tavern?
There was a guy in the background of the tavern that was, like, from Game of Thrones. I forget his name.
What? Are you thinking of Darren the Drunken, who's not Aemon?
No.
Hmm.
Maybe I'm making that up. Okay. Knight. While I'm looking this up, what stood out to you most, Sean and or Steve, about this episode and how it differed from Game of Thrones? And do you think it can continue?
Probably the party scene. Where he's talking to the king dude, and he's just like,
Lionel Baratheon. Baratheon.
Yeah, Baratheon. And he's just kind of like, what do I do? And he's kind of like, no, no, man, you're kind of fucked. And then he like walks outside, he talks to that guy, and he's like, dude, my knight bled for you in these mountains. And he's like, I don't give a fuck.
And he's like, lots of people bled for me. Blood. I don't know.
Yeah, he's like, it kind of sets up for like the cold, like harsh reality of what he's going to have to struggle through, which I kind of like. A setup for someone who's like not going to have it easy.
Huh. Fair enough. What about you, Sean?
Yeah, I mean, the guy playing Lyle Baratheon like gets the MVP of the episode. I think he was phenomenal. Super entertaining, charismatic, without being like a total joke. Like, it's clear that people like both fear and respect him, and they're like, this guy's kind of fucking scary, even though he seems so fun. You know, I also thought it was like, he was like an interesting, because he feels he has such a huge personality, and I kind of presume, based on what I know about like the character, at least in the books, like, again, like typical Baratheon, like a large, like an actually large, physically strong, imposing person. And I think even next to Dunk, he's still like, you know, a good bit shorter, which I think kind of conveys like Dunk's stature a little bit, at least physically, which I thought was kind of cool. Yeah, I'm interested to see where that character goes, or how the story's unfolded. I mean, I think I know everything that's going to happen.
Well, I don't know, because I love the Ashford chair part. That was also great. Mm-hmm. Although that was not in the book, if I recall correctly, the novella. And neither were the prostitutes outside of Manfred's tent.
Mm.
Right?
I don't recall okay, specifically.
Fair. I read the book to catch up for this, and like, so I think that's,
yeah. But I read it a while ago, and I was like, I'm almost through Fire and Blood. So I was like, oh, cool. And this will be like a perfect opportunity to pick that back up. And I just haven't quite gotten there yet. But yeah. So your guess is better than mine.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, but let's talk. There, a lot of the third act is kind of like not in the book at all, right? Like, as far as I remember, the dancing and Lord Lynel. I don't think he even like is mentioned in the book until much later, because I think it's only there when the tournament starts. So I think, yeah, he gets more like, but he is the center character of this entire episode.
Yeah.
And kind of like this. And I think, do you think he'll play a much bigger role in the overall, or is it just getting, you know, are we just filling time because it's one novella to do an entire season of television?
And it's only six episodes and they're all like within like 30 to 40 minutes, which is,
yeah,
kind of interesting.
But still, it's only like, I think it's like less than 80 pages.
Well, I mean, this thought just kind of struck me.
No, that's so, totally fair. Totally fair. I was just,
again, it may have also been the half the gummy that I ate like half an hour ago. Something struck me regardless. Fair. So we got six episodes. Let's set Dunk aside as one and then the six episodes. I'm wondering if each episode is going to kind of give a bit more of a spotlight to one of the seven on Dunk's side.
Okay.
Leading up to what I presume will be the finale. I'm kind of wondering about that. I'm not saying like quite like focus as heavily as it did on Lynel Baratheon, but mm-hmm. I think it would be kind of interesting. There's also, this feels like something Steve might know. There's also the Sansa Stark theory about how like each of like the champions on like Dunk's side end up engaged to Sansa. Like she, like their descendant is engaged to Sansa at some point.
Mm.
And it like starts with, well, I guess Joffrey, but like technically not a Baratheon, but a Baratheon in name. And then goes to an actual Lannister when she gets married to Tyrion. And then it like kind of keeps like, it goes down the line or something. There's something like that. But I'm wondering if they're going to kind of focus more on, you know, okay, so we're going to do Dunk and Egg. And then like, we're going to kind of feature like one or two other people, you know, that you need to know who these people are.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. But like, it seemed like they established like Lynel as like a main villain, right? Like he was trash talking the shit out of Dunk. Like he's like, oh yeah, you're gonna lose your horse, you're gonna lose the like everything, and then you're not a knight at all. So
I like what Steve said about that. I feel like he was just kind of, not a villain. I just feel like he's given him a dose of reality.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah, I think it's supposed to be like a sort of grim dark setting.
Okay,
you know, and it's not like and this is in between Game of Thrones and House of the Dragon. Yeah,
it's like right in the middle.
It's like 80 years after House of the Dragon and like 100 years before Game of Thrones.
Yeah. So I, you know, there's. I haven't read the books or anything like that. So just from like a pure TV perspective, I think the direction is that it's going to be very like, you know, like a rise, struggle and rise again type of thing. Almost like, I feel for some reason, I really get like a Lord of the Rings vibe off of it, but I could be very, very wrong in that.
No, that seems pretty. I would say it's like, I mean, it's definitely much more grounded than Lord of the Rings in this kind of, and I think this is much more grounded than Game of Thrones, right? We're dealing with, and there's none of the political intrigue or this great big convoluted story. It's very simple. And I do appreciate that. I think that's kind of a good direction for this like offshoot, especially if it's like a short and it's like, here's what's happening. Here's what we're, you know, like it's kind of like just leading up obviously to this big, you know, contest. And that's great. I like this. We have a beginning, middle and end. Although I'm worried HBO will continue this, you know, with something else like after this, like this, you know.
What do you mean?
Well, do you think they'll like try to make, you know, like more adventures of Dunk and Egg like after this?
I mean, after they're going to do like, I think at least 3 or 4 seasons. I think they've already renewed it. Yeah.
And that's not based on
anything. I think their plan is to cover basically like kind of like Game of Thrones was doing, at least initially, doing like a book a season.
Okay.
So a novella a season roughly or something like that.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
So we'll see. I mean, the interesting thing too, and I don't know how long term, because I know they have a lot of, you know, Song of Ice and Fire projects either in the works right now or in production, or, you know, having Game of Thrones having completed. But I think it's kind of in the way that I feel like the period right after Dance of the Dragons ends, like after, spoiler alert, Rhaenyra's son Aegon is the Child King, because everybody else is dead. Yeah. Like that period, maybe not quite like right then, but basically like, you know, a few years forward. So like Viserys II is king, and then Aegon IV. Like that's such an interesting period of time that I'm almost just like, why don't you just kind of continue like that part of the story? Because it's a really interesting thing. But then like in the same way, it's like, well, what becomes of Duncan Egg, you know, after their little, you know, Robin Hood and Little John? Yeah, Little John.
It was Little John? That seems very like...
Yeah. No, it's Little John. I just got tripped up because it's also Prince John. Anyways, you know, the kind of buddy medieval times, you know, dynamic. Like buddy comedy, buddy movie. Be interesting to see kind of what happens going forward, you know, as they're both, you know, or Egg is fully grown.
Yeah.
And all that. You know.
Pretty cool.
You know, I just think it would be interesting to keep covering it. There's just so much that they could do, you know, and
yeah. Do you think they'll fill up the whole 100 years?
No.
No. You don't think they'll try to like pull a, you know, end of Game of Thrones and just fill in the blanks? I mean, to be fair, with like Game of Thrones,
that epilogue. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. There's too much money to pump out of that period, like because you got the other Blackfyre rebellions, then you got Summerhall, and then you've got Robert's Rebellion. So like that those are all things that could very well be made into a TV series at some point. If not, yeah, you know, maybe a movie. I don't know how they're going to handle it, but like they're already making a either limited series or movie of Aegon's conquest.
I mean,
so the beginning of Fire and Blood. Yeah. So
sick.
We'll see.
All right, Steve, anything else from your side?
No, you know, there wasn't enough for me to really like draw a conclusion. And I don't mean that like in a way of like, I just mean like how I feel about the series overall. And it's a pilot episode, so I don't consider it like I don't hold it against it because it's really hard to set everything up in one episode.
Well, especially because this is, you know, part of a much, much bigger universe.
Right. So I think there's more to it. I want to see more and know more and do more, but that's what I think is capturing the importance of the series. I think it's really good that it's got me like hooked into it.
Fair enough. So I don't know, you know, if we're going to, do we judge this binge worthy yet? Because we haven't seen more than one episode, but I guess that's kind of based on it. Would you binge it just off of this?
Hard for me to say. And I almost feel like it would be, I'd rather just like to like give my vote to somebody who never watched Game of Thrones or House of the Dragon or read the books. Who's just like being like, hey, here's a show about this guy. What do you think? Like, you know, because if you go in with the knowledge of what's happening, what happened before, what happened after, and then like what you're actually watching.
Yeah.
I mean, I would binge it if I could, regardless.
Right.
So like, but that also is going in with the, like, yeah, I like this world. I'm interested in seeing how they, you know, portray it.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that this would hook me in if I were like coming to this whole world cold.
Fair. Well,
so
I don't think the show gets made like
Yeah,
unless there's a bigger universe. Like it's definitely not as compelling a story that HBO would pick it up, right? It got picked up because it's, you know, Westeros and it's Game of Thrones and, you know, they want to recapture some of that magic. And it is a different story and it's entertaining, but I don't know if it's like, you know, HBO-y enough. Is that... I'll tell you what.
Yeah.
We will hold off and we will discuss a little bit more at the beginning of next episode, obviously, or beginning of, you know, next week, because we'll have all watched it and we can give more of an opinion. We don't have to actually vote today. Anything else that stood out this episode that you guys want to, that you think we should talk about?
It was something to do with the dead girls and they were saying something to him that stood out to me. I forget. What was it, from like one whore to another type of thing?
Oh, the, a hedge is just like a knight, but sadder.
Yeah, but there's something like deeper on that level. It was like pretty simple.
Let me look it up.
Yeah.
I'll trust you with that. Well, he's looking that up. Steve, Sean, anything from you?
No. I mean, I thought the dynamic, like you guys were saying, like the only two scenes that Dunk and Egg actually had together, I already thought that their chemistry was great. And he's going to be a funny foil because he's clear that he's very bright.
Yep.
Obviously far brighter than anyone would guess he is. But like, I think it's, you know, it's very clearly there that like they have something special between the two of them. So I'm looking forward to more of that.
Hell yeah.
I got a question.
Oh yeah. What's that?
What's that guy that I said that I had? Jumanji?
Yeah. Jawandi?
No, it's John Williams. I also got this other guy here. I think he's German. Yeah, he sounds German.
Like Hans Zimmer?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's it.
What are you doing with all these composers? Do you have an end game, Mickey?
Well, I had a contract with him. He's in The Lion King. And what he didn't realize was the fine print means that he's got to come live with Mickey after 30 years in a cage. I'm going to re-notify him.
Don't put them to death. Like, what a fight to the death between John Williams and Hans Zimmer. They're different, okay? They're good at different things.
Yeah, they're already communicating back and forth in music. I think something about digging. I don't know. I've been eating Mr. Deasy's fingers again. They've been getting me real messed up.
You should probably stop. They're probably filled with like formaldehyde and whatever gross chemicals they use to freeze him. It can't be healthy, Mickey. At least narcotics, you know what's in them.
Have you ever had any Disney blood in you, though?
No, I have not.
Would you like to?
I don't think I would.
Make my brooms dance again.
You're pricing out the like middle class game out of your theme parks, too.
He has to dodge
too.
A lot.
Oh, my God.
He's got some fresh stuff to start the year, I'm pretty sure.
He's definitely overindulging in those fingers. Steve, did you find what you were looking for?
I did not.
Bummer. All right, we'll discuss it more next week when that comes up. Last thing, speaking of Disney, did you hear that like there's this new like that people are going into like serious debt to go to Disney World now?
For what? Just for going to Disney World?
Yeah, just for going. Like,
why?
For a family of four, the price has gone so high that, like, but, like, it is kind of the quintessential once-time vacation for the middle class. It used to be we, like, go every year. I mean,
The middle class used to be able to buy houses, too. But
that's true. But now, apparently, like, one time to take your kids to Disney World will, like, put you into serious debt. And, like, $5,000 to $10,000, easy. And that's insane for like, that's what you would pay for like a European vacation that takes you like to like
all expenses.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, Mickey's up to something. Leave it there.
Who is his sire?
Steve.
Hey, got rid of Kathleen Kennedy. I thought you guys would be happy with me.
I am very happy about that. But you know, It's kind of a little like, is there enough time to save Star Wars? It's kind of the damage has already been done.
Is that that thing Ronald Reagan was doing?
Yeah, sure. The missile defense system that didn't work and cost billions of dollars.
I'm glad that somebody finally listened to me about Greenland.
You want to talk about Greenland, Mickey?
I've been telling people that it's my Czechoslovakia for years. Nobody really understood what I was talking about.
Isn't it Chechia now? You're not allowed to talk about Czechoslovakia. Well, Slovakia but, and Chechia.
But what was his name, Mr. Antler? Mr. Antler took my advice about Czechoslovakia.
Oh, yeah? Did he?
Yeah, Mickey needed a war. The economy was bad.
You needed some of them, their propaganda cartoons? I saw that Donald Duck cartoon, Mickey.
It's a fucking Nazi, man.
Well, it was still made by Mr. Disney.
What are you saying?
Mr. Disney's a Nazi.
Wow. His fingers inside my stomach is pointing at you right now. I want you to know that, man.
Just don't eat all of them, just so he can't Nazi salute. That's the important part.
Don't worry, I'm having Goofy feed his toast to his kid.
Steve, final thoughts.
I would like to put ahead of the table a question.
Please. That's what we need, a distraction.
The Saving Private Ryan extended universe.
Okay. Is
three phases.
Lay it on me.
Much thought into this. Phase one, the Vin Diesel prequel.
Sure. All right. I would watch that, actually.
Phase two, Raising Private Ryan.
What, like when he was a kid?
Phase three, Miller's Revenge.
What revenge?
He's back.
No more questions.
I would definitely watch a Vin Diesel prequel movie.
Oh, I got it, Steve. Miller's Revenge. Ryan died. Oh my God. It's like Mad Men. Ryan actually dies at the end of Saving Private Ryan, mm-hmm, but Tom Hanks takes his dog tags and his uniform and puts it on and says, yes. I'm Thank Private you. Ryan.
Yes.
And he goes home and like the mom, it's like a weird Simpsons thing with, you know, Principal Skinner. Or she just like accepts it because she's so traumatized. And Tom Hanks is like, Tom Hanks is a very nice, helpful guy, but he's like living this whole life. And then it goes on into the future. And so like when he turns to his wife who thinks that he's Private Ryan and that in the cemetery, he's like, no, actually, I'm Captain Miller.
Thank you.
And that's Someone where the Linkin Park it. Song drops, and then we cut to the credits.
Oh, I know what you're talking about. Let me show you. God, yes, continue.
Yeah, and then after that, like, there's an after credit scene where it's very clear that like we're getting another sequel, and Miller is back for vengeance, and it's literally just this old guy like cutting down people in Germany, but it's kind of like a Rambo, I guess.
Yes, I agree. Now. There is one way we have to end it, and it basically is this way.
Yes.
You know what?
You know, that I'm song might have single-handedly gotten me to go see that movie. Because that's like the only reason I think I saw that movie. Oh, I was like, oh, that song's a bop. Okay.
That's where we're going to end it. I'm not even going to put our theme tune. I'm just going to use the fucking...
Thanks.
Oh my God, that's incredible. Well, this was awesome, guys. Thank you so much for this. We're going to continue next week with our YouTube series, unless there's a new show that drops. So Steve, get ready. We're going with your YouTube show.
I'm so excited for that.
I'm ready. I have something lined up. You're gonna be fucked up.
I'm thrilled. I can't.
You're
wait.
The man who introduced me to the internet historian. So like, I don't know how you could top that.
I have something so peak. I am debating between two episodes. I'll give you the titles of the episode.
Okay.
You guys can vote on which one you think would be better. Give me 1 second. It's like a bulk title. So hold on.
I am intrigued.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, please hold. First one. First episode. Dark Dude 2 or The Goon Caves of Tower Unite?
I'm so excited for this. I
next week.
Wonderful.
Cannot say soon enough. Stay tuned, you lovely people. Enjoy your time, guys. I will see you here next week. Stop.